This is an interview being conducted between Karen Duder and Reva. The date is the 5th of August, 1997. Reva, could I ask, what is your date of birth?
Oh, yes, January 27, 1936.
1936. And were you born here in Canada?
I was born in Montreal.
And you lived there?
Almost all my life, until I was almost 40. I moved to Estevan Point, which is a lighthouse in Nova Scotia. My lover got posted there, so off we went.
Oh, okay. And so you went to, did you go to sort of public school or religious school of any kind?
Both.
Both.
I went to public school, and after school, every day, 5 days a week, or actually six, I went on, maybe I didn't go Friday, I went to Hebrew school every day until I graduated. So I graduated in your school and Hebrew school.
And how old were you then? About 17?
Oh, goodness, no. Hebrew school, I think I got my certificate, I think it was 1949. I was maybe 12 or 13 or something when I graduated from high school. Yeah.
Do you remember growing up, what kinds of feelings you had toward people? How do you identify yourself now?
Now I identify as a lesbian. Back then, I didn't. Yeah. I was pretty straight.
So you had any feelings of attraction toward women or just towards...
Not that I was aware of, except, I had these young kid dreams of heroism, saving my counselor from a burning building and all this stuff. But I never related it to a sexual thing. I never had a context that way for it. And I never knew in my waking state that I had an attraction for these women. But I was drawn to my counselors. So it's probably there.
I was gonna ask you if you ever had a crush on a female teacher or a male teacher, what that felt
like. I love my counselors, my female, my grade three and four teacher. I absolutely loved. I was in love with her. She was like a goddess. But it wasn't sexual to me in my head. It was just like what do you call that kind of love on another plane. Mm. Heroic love,
How many sisters and brothers do you have?
One sister, younger, 3.5 years, very straight. Sort of borderline homophobic. Tries hard to be accepting of me. But it's my little homophobic things slip up once in a while, they pop out.
How long has she known?
Ever since I've known. I'm one of these poor people that just barreled out of her, never went in a closet. Just, there I was. Deal with it. I guess I'm still like that.
How would you describe your childhood?
Oh, I was not happy. I had a sort of a very oppressive mom. And a large reaction dad. He got up and cracked the dawn, went to work, came home, ate, went to work, came home, had supper, went to work, came home at midnight. This was 6 days a week, or 5 days a week. And I never saw him. My mother was very oppressive. She hit me a lot, and I hit me a lot. I think she was schizophrenic or something. I don't know.
Had she worked before marriage?
She did work when she was young. She was an immigrant. She came from Russia when she was, I think, 15. Never learned to write in English. Arrived to find a new stepmother, a father she hadn't seen in 15 years. So it's all very traumatic for her, and she just passed her trauma on to me.
Yeah. So. What about your dad's occupation? What was he?
For his life, he mostly owned a garage. Body man. Well known in the city.
So the 6 days a week of work, was that Was that because of his occupation, or was it common at the time, you think, for a man to work 6 days a week?
I think my dad was afraid of my mom in his own little way. I think he just wanted her to be home as much as possible. I think part of it was he worked hard and, you know, he supported us and he gave money to his parents and my mother's parents. So I think he needed to work, but he didn't need to work quite the way he did. I think he liked being absent and away from the house tensions.
How'd you get on with your sister?
We fought like a cat and a dog for years. We really only made peace with one another, in the last maybe 10 years.
So well after you grew up.
Well after. We're good friends now. But we were never friends growing up.
Where does she live?
Not far from here. Oh. We moved out here maybe it's 4 years ago now. Yep. Hmm.
Well, when you were growing up, I'm wondering, with the environment that you've described, what kind of discussions took place about your future as a woman? Like, was it expected that you would get married and have children?
Absolutely. And not only married, but a doctor or a lawyer. Not just any old schnook. Younger Jewish parents, they expect you to live in the suburbs and, you know, have a Mercedes-Benz in the driveway and perfect little children. But that wasn't to come. I did get married when I was 21. I got divorced when I was 22. And he wasn't a doctor or a lawyer. He was a TV repairman.
Had you known him for a long time, or you just met?
We met at night school. It's okay. Just a guy. I wanted to get out of my house. And in the 50s, the only way a nice, good Jewish girl got out of her house was to get married. You didn't join hippie commune or go traveling with your girlfriend. You got married. So that's what I did. I got out of the house legally. Nice and neat.
And that message that you should get married and have kids, was that reinforced at school as well?
I think it was predominantly understood that you grew up, you got married, you had kids. That was the future. Yeah.
What are your memories of school? Did you enjoy it?
I think I had a very severe case of ADD as a kid. Of course, I didn't have this label in my day, but I spent a lot of time daydreaming out the window, and I was largely physically present but mentally absent. And teachers would be very frustrated because I was somehow really bright but not thriving in the school environment. I think I was bored, but I'm not sure. But anyhow, at the end of grade 7, they had a big powwow with my parents to say, we don't understand it, because they gave everybody IQ tests. And I had a really, really high IQ, but I was at the very bottom of the class. They said, we don't know what this is about. We're recommending her for the Latin science in high school. Of course, who could cope with Latin science when you're at the end of your class? So I flunked out grade 8 and went into the general course, just regular arts, I think, and did a little better.
Yeah.
But I did end up dropping out and going back at night.
I was going to ask you about night school, so that was the way you finished off.
Yeah.
Right. So you talked about going into general art. So what were the subjects that you studied at school?
Oh, just everything. French, English, Latin, you name it, I studied it. Arithmetic. It's the whole nine yards. Yeah, I didn't get in the Bobo class, whatever. They used to have something called the Bobo class. I didn't get up in there. They would never put me in there with my IQ. So they insisted I had to stay in the mainstream of education, but I did drop out of the sciences.
Right.
So, and I was really good with the language arts and with Latin and French and all that. But.
Were there any domestic science type classes that you had to do as well?
Yep, I flunked sewing, I flunked cooking. Well, they weren't my best forte. So, yeah, we had to take those two. Uh-huh. We were expected to have all the little necessary trades to be a good wife, be a good mom.
How many years did you have to do that? Was there like an age range where you did those things?
I can't remember. I think it was grade 6 and 7, sort of toward the end of grade school, how we did that. Yeah. Mm.
And you went back to night school. Were you working during the day?
Yep. After I finished high school, grade 10, whatever I finished, I don't remember, grade 9, grade 10, I took a business course and I worked in an office. I had a good job and I went to school at night. Mm. That's where I met my husband. That's where I met my first lesbian lover. It's a great place to go. you'll have to forgive my sense of humor.
That's just fine. Now, my next question that comes out of that, that has to come out of that, is did you meet your first lesbian lover before or after you met your husband?
After. I was married. Mm. Yeah, I was married. I got made friends at school, and one of those friends was somebody with the name of Reva. Mm. And Reva was reading all these books and lending them to me. And next thing I knew, I was hooked. So it was not anything I knew about or had a conscious awareness of, but I realized I'd rather be with Reva than George. That was a tip-off. I knew right away this marriage was in trouble. So.
And those were the romance novels that you had
the lesbian,
described?
Yeah, in Forbidden Love. Mm-hmm. Those were the ones. Yep. I read lots of them. Mm. Yep. And I fought against them at first. I said, no way, you're not. Reva said, I think I'm like that. No way. No way, you can't be. I'll introduce you to a nice guy. I know George has a cousin. I tried everything, but obviously nothing was going to work.
Do you think she gave them to you? Was there any possibility that she might have given them to you, not just to sort of say, I think I'm like this, but do you think maybe she wondered if you were as well?
I think, well, she knew I was married, but I think there was an attraction that we had, and I think she was hoping maybe, you know, something would develop. Well, something obviously did. Yeah, it did.
So to backtrack for a minute, before you met George, that's his name, George?
Yep.
Had you dated any other guys?
Oh, lots.
When did you begin dating?
I think I must have been 12 or 13. We were a bunch of men and young men and women. We hung out together and we all had our little boyfriends in the group, within the group, kind of. And I was always really popular. I had lots of boyfriends. And being short, I had my pick of the short ones and the tall ones. So that was really cool. I always had a date Saturday night. Some fellow, yep.
And your parents were okay with you dating?
Yep. Yeah, they were happy. They gave me dire warnings. My mother said, don't let the boys touch your breasts. It'll make them sag. So this was a little piece of advice. She should see me now. She'd probably roll over in her grave. I haven't worn a bra for so many years. It's not the boys that made them sag. It's gravity. Gravity did it.
I've never heard that one before. The touching them would make them sag.
Yeah. Hmm. Mom told me this.
So she obviously, I mean, she let you date, but she set some parameters what could happen. Yeah. Could you describe some
more
of that?
Well, she'd always be awake waiting for me when I came through the door. She'd be right there saying, I've been waiting for you to come home. Now I can go to sleep. She worried about me. She did try to give me sex ed. In fact, I got into much trouble in school over sex ed. She did the routine thing with the book and the egg and the fallopian tube and the journey and talked to me about pregnancy, never explained how the sperm and the egg actually got it together. Yeah. But I had a girlfriend who was a year older and she had a cousin who was even older. And he told us exactly how the sperm and the egg could get together. Well, I had a friend at school. And her mother was sort of where my mother was in the sex ed program with the diagrams and, you know. And I said to her, Irma, I know how the sperm and the egg do it. how does that, and I told her, and she told her mother, who freaked out and called my mother, and this caused me to get really physically ill and take to my bed for a few days. I think I got something like pneumonia, or I don't know what, but
how old were you?
We were in grade school, so we were too old.
Mm. Was that, what age do you think she started telling you about this stuff?
Oh, well, I was really young. She was very much into getting the book and explaining clinically about my body and about, and if I asked a question, she always answered it, but very clinically.
Mm-hmm. No. So she would have told you then about menstruation before it happened.
Well, I started at 11, so physically matured early. So I think probably I was 10 or 11 when I got this whole spiel about the fallopian tubes and the eggs.
Mm.
Yeah.
So she, in using clinical language, she didn't throw in euphemisms like the curse or anything like that.
Hmm. No, she was very medical model, except when I started menstruating, she slapped me across the face really hard, and she said this was something that you had to do. So I was alone with my sister when she got her period, and I said, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but Mommy did it to me, so I'm going to slap you on the face. So I slapped her one on the face. That's as old world as I got about menstruation. But apart from that little strange bit, she was very knowledgeable and very much book-oriented, even though she couldn't write in English. She could read really well, and she was a great reader, and she was very into information dissemination and stuff like that. So,
where do you think she got that from? What was, had she been told stuff by her mother, or?
Her own mother died when she was four, and she was brought up in an orphanage in Russia, and I think Catholic one at that. So her information wasn't too rounded, I don't think.
So maybe she was reacting against that and trying to do something better for you?
Or? Yeah, probably. She just was, she believed in information and education. I think she thought she was educating me, and I guess she was, to some extent. She just left out a whole bunch of stuff. No.
And she gave the same education to your younger sister as well?
I think so, yeah. I don't know, they don't do that maybe today, but in the old days, Kotex used to have a little book. Do they still have this little book? They had a little book in their Kotex box, and it explained all about how menstruation works, the ovaries and the cycle, and their little diagrams. They're great.
So you had that one, and what about as far as sex ed itself? Did she buy a book, or?
I think she got hold of a book, had a book around about, I remember seeing a book about a baby and how it's formed and how it grows inside the mother and how it gets born and all that. I think I technically knew all this. I just never knew how the sperm got in there. She didn't tell me that part. That came from the streets. So.
Did you and your sister talk about sex at all when you were really young?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't remember that we did.
But obviously you and girlfriends did.
Yeah, we did it for sure. Yeah.
So I'm assuming that because your mother was raised in an orphanage, when it came time for your birth, did she have any female relatives who helped her out or supported her through that or anything like that?
I guess so. She was pretty close to my father, had five sisters, and I think she was kind of part of his family. So I think she had some support around it. And they were all young, and they were all having babies at the same time, so I've got a whack of cousins, so I know she was just one of the women having babies, and I think they were kind of together. Mm. Don't use your hands, Reva. The tape recorder can't see them.
You can use your hands as much as you want. Now, what about your dad? You said he was absent a lot. Even if he'd been around more, do you think, would he have taken part in any of this instruction that you had, or was it just your mother's thing?
I think it was left to my mother, largely. I don't think my dad would have participated much if he had been around. And he never talked about stuff to me, never. So I don't think he would have.
Was there any sex education at school?
I don't think so. Can't remember any, but I don't think so.
And what about in terms of religious teachings? What sense did you get from religious teachings about what you should and should not be doing?
Not a whole lot, actually. I mean, I'm Jewish. I went to Hebrew school. My parents are sort of lean to the orthodoxy, but they never gave me much of a sense of how my religion impacts my sexuality. I don't have a sense of that being part of my education, really. Just, you know, stories of the Old Testament. And I remember Ruth and Naomi. I think that one impacted me. Before I knew I was a dyke, I knew I loved Ruth and Naomi's story. So, yeah.
When you started dating, what kind of places would you go? What kind of recreational activities did you enjoy?
Well, after we moved out of the herd thing and I started single dating, I guess I was always into dancing and movies. Although I'm not a movie person now, I think in those days, a typical Saturday date was go to the movies or go dancing, go to the club, have a drink, have a dance.
Do you remember any favorite movies from that time period?
No.
What kind of dances?
Oh, just regular, not dances, but you know, the clubs had dancing. You could go dancing at like McMoran's here. So you could just dance, have a drink or dinner and dance at dance floor. So that's what we do.
So this is in the late 40s? The early 50s?
Yeah.
So in any particular form of dancing that you were into?
Oh, jiving. I love to jive. I still like to jive. I'm still a good jiver, except now I lead. Those days I followed. Yeah.
Did your parents know what kind of dancing you were into? How did they feel about
it? Oh, yeah, that was fine. Yeah? There was no restriction about that. Mm-hmm. The restriction was don't have sex before you're married. Mm-hmm. Don't be promiscuous. I got all those little warning things. But apart from that, there was not much.
And did they give clear instructions as to what, in that broad range of sexual activity, what was permissible and what wasn't? Or was it just an absolute, you don't do any of it?
You don't do any of it. Behave yourself. I think kissing goodnight was okay, but it could lead to things, so you weren't to kiss for too long, you know. And my mother was really, really uptight about this, that I would get into trouble. She should only know what I did. I didn't get into bad trouble, but I did my share of necking and petting and whatever kids did at that time.
Was there like a time you had to be home by on a Saturday night?
Oh, I always pushed it. My mother said 11, I came at 12, and she finally capitulated to 12, came at 1. When she gave in to 1, I came at 2. I guess I was a bad kid. Yeah.
And you talked about having a drink. So this is alcohol?
Yeah.
And how old would you have been then?
17, 18. No.
Did they know that you were drinking?
Well, I wasn't really drinking a lot, so it wouldn't have been an issue. It's not like I ever came home drunk or polluted. I'd have a drink, you know, or two, but that would be it. So it wasn't really an issue. I don't recall it being an issue. Yeah. But I'm still not a drinker. I never got to be a drinker. It's good.
The club scene that you were describing, what kind of age mix was in those clubs, do you think?
I think people largely in their 20s, maybe 30s, young, seems to me. You were a young crowd.
And you were going out with a group of people your own age, or were they all that little bit older than you?
Oh, mostly my age. I hung out with peers a lot. Yeah. Sometimes they were even a bit younger, I think. But no, I didn't tend to hang out with an older crowd.
And it was straight clubs.
Straight, very right. Straight.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of sort of social group of like what were they sort of kids from? Well, you know, teens and older and young adults from richer families or from poorer families of the clubs that you liked? Was there a particular social group or was it a mix?
I don't really know. Probably a mix would be my guess. I don't know. I don't have a sense of social strata stuff, really. It seemed to me everybody, you know, this was after World War II. And seems to me everybody was more or less in the same place. We were all just emerging, you know, back into life. The war ended in 45, so by the time 50s came, people were just really having a good time and getting back into being alive and not worrying about fighting a war and not worrying about, you know, all the racial tensions that we did have earlier. I mean, being Jewish, I used to get beat up or chased by the non-Jewish kids a lot when I was a, you know, young kid. So that kind of all tapered off and went away, and we were all more or less on the same footing, I think, at that particular time. I don't think there was so much rich and poor and in the middle. We were all sort of in the same place, more or less, I think.
How was the war for you? Did your dad go away to fight?
No. He didn't go away to fight, but the war was scary and awful, and we had to deal with air raids and blackouts and all that shit. I hated the war. I was terrified of sirens, the sound of a siren, like an ambulance, or for years, it took me a long time to realize it's just an ambulance, it's not an air raid drill. And I was very impacted by the war. I had nightmares and I hated it. And I got into a big trouble because in those days you had to pay a tax on every radio, and they said, come to your door and say, how many radios do you have? My mother had hidden a radio under the bed, and I said to the guy, well, we have another radio under the bed. Oh, geez. And it was $10 for a radio, and in those days $10 was a lot of money, and I got roundly beaten for that, telling where the radio was. They didn't tell me not to tell. So I was a kid. So I told. So I didn't like the war years. They were not nice.
The air raid drills that you had, they were at school?
At school, yeah. And at home, too. When that air raid drill siren went, well, not the drill, but when that siren went, you doused all the lights and dove for cover. You know? So scary, especially if you're a kid. It's very scary.
How long after the war was it that you began to realize that you could start having fun again?
Well, that's what I think. I think, you know, by 1950, people were emerging from that shock. Like, it ended in 45, but it didn't really end, because then waves and waves of immigrants arrived, and people with shattered lives and shattered families and shattered dreams, and we were there, you know, to kind of take them up and be there for them and whatever. So I would say there was another 5 years of, you know, de-escalation. So I think my memory is that in the 50s we started to really bounce back to the fun side of life. It didn't happen like right away. You know, there's a lot of assimilating of these people, and there's, oh, it's awful. It's going on and on.
Were you living in a Jewish neighborhood?
Well, I was living in a mixed Jewish, French-Canadian, one Irish Catholic family neighborhood. Yeah.
And did a lot of the new immigrants move into your neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Growing up in the neighborhood with the mix of people you describe, did you play with kids from your neighborhood or from outside of, from further away?
I didn't play too much with the kids from my neighborhood. I think I belonged to some youth group and went off to be with them, largely, I recall.
Were there any kids that you definitely weren't allowed to play with in your neighborhood?
Not allowed to play with, no. No.
None who were, there was no family that was sort of, you know, the bad family.
Stay away from them, no. No. Mm. We had other things to worry about. We had a guy who regularly exposed himself on our street. He had anyway, we called him Harmonica Joe. He was a dirty old man, and there was another kid. If you weren't careful, he'd got you in the hallway and get raped. I mean, there were a lot, it was a very unsavory, a lot of unsavory people around that area when I was growing up. So I learned to watch my backside, I guess. Those were the people we were warned against, you know, stay away from these people. And there were more of them. And my sister got molested in the park. It was just not a nice neighborhood.
Did you learn about these people from your parents or from your friends or both?
Well, from the neighborhood, everybody knew, you know, that there were these weirdos out there. You have to be careful. They were very obviously out there, and then you went outside, and there was this guy, you know, masturbating and standing on the sidewalk. You knew he was real, and you better stay away. You could call him names, and, you know.
So these guys were known by name, or?
Yeah, everybody knew who they were. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the cops ever came and said, okay, guys, you're off the street, you know, you're going to a halfway house or, you know, an institution or you need help or this isn't good for the kids. Nobody gave a shit. I guess the awareness maybe wasn't there, I don't know. Nobody ever took these characters away. They were there all not growing up.
How did that impact on your ability to go out as a teenage girl? Was it expected that you would be chaperoned places, that you would always be in someone's company?
I was. My dad drove me and picked me up most places, unless I was with a date, and he was responsible, I suppose, for my well-being. He told me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did the guys you dated, did they have cars or have access to their parents' vehicles?
No, the principals. I sat on Abby Baker's handlebar. I was fine. Well, bicycles. Not often too many people have cars, in fact. I mean, even adults didn't have cars. And cars weren't like everybody has a car or two today. We have. My dad had a car. He was a very beloved man in the neighborhood. He took the kids to drive. It was a big excitement. None of my boyfriends had cars.
So you cycle to the club?
Well, when I got to the club, then there was taxis, I guess. Yeah.
I was thinking you'd probably be in a longish dress. Yeah.
Oh, like I wore dresses, I guess, in those days. Oh, God, it's so long ago. I've worn a dress forever. I can't remember. But yeah, I wore dresses when we went to the club. And I went out on my dates. Yeah, I think we mostly took cabs. Cabs everywhere. Cars. Nobody had cars. I don't remember anybody having a car.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I just don't remember what we did on the prom. I went to some guy's prom. I said prom. And how the hell we all got around? I think Rocky Kushner, his father was a doctor, had a car. And I think we may have gone off in his car, but I really I don't remember. I don't remember a bunch of colors either.
So if they didn't have vehicles, you wouldn't have got any of those stern warnings about what could happen
in the back seat of a car? No. No, I didn't know anybody at the back seat. No. Not until way later.
Were the guys that you dated, were they from around your neighborhood, from your school, or how did you get to know them?
Some were from high school, some were from this youth club that I, it was a Zionist youth club that I belonged to. Some of the guys were from there, and some of the guys were, somebody fixes you up.
Were any of them really serious? Like, did you get into serious relationships with them for a while?
Yeah, some.
And how far would you go in terms of affection?
Not far. I was quite virginly by the time I was 21. I was still virgin. The person I lost, with whom I lost my virginity, was actually my husband. We were not married, but he was the person that,
So tell me about him.
Nothing much to tell. He was a really ordinary guy. He was a schmuck. They were getting married, and he tells the rabbi, "Oh, I don't believe in God." Even though he's Jewish, the rabbi says, "Well, I can't marry you. You'll have to convert." So, next thing I know, he's going for instruction and this and that, and they throw him in to use a Christian word, they baptized him so he could get married. It's a performance. He was a guy I met at school. We studied together. He needed to get out of his house. I needed to get out of my house. I think, I don't know that I was madly in love or anything, but it's a really ordinary guy. He was very, very, very knowledgeable about history and classical music. Otherwise, he was boring.
But you got on well enough at the time.
Well, it got me where I needed to go. Because he was a vehicle. I think even if I hadn't come out as a lesbian, I don't think he'd still be married. There wasn't enough glue in there.
You still keep in touch?
We did for a really long time. It's just really fairly recently in the last 3 years that I'm not in touch.
So it was a short marriage, a year, more or less.
Almost 2 years.
How difficult was it separating in terms of family pressure, things like that?
It was terrible. It was really bad. My mother phones me at 3 o'clock in the morning. She's hysterical. "I hear you're running around with a bunch of lesbians." And everybody was going nuts. And putting a lot of pressure on me to stay in the marriage. And in fact, at one point, I couldn't handle the pressure, and I said, "Okay, I'm going back into this marriage." And then the woman with whom I became involved decided she'd try and commit suicide because she couldn't live without me. Mm. At this point, I went, "Okay, I have to do some heavy-duty thinking here." And I decided anyway that I would go for the lesbian relationship. Yeah. So that was it. That was then the marriage was finished. I said, "Okay, I'm out of here."
And how was he with all of that? What kind of response? Was it aggressive or...?
Well, he wanted to be really straight with George, which my girlfriend took him on a, they went for a ride, and she explained, you know, our feelings. He taped all of this. And then he threatened me with, he's going to play the tape for everybody. I said, "You do that and I'll sue you for defamation of character." You believe me, didn't play the tape. So finally we had our divorce and we settled down. We worked out a friendship, in fact, and kept in touch over the years. Yeah.
And you've been hanging out with this crowd of lesbians.
There was
before.
Not a crowd of lesbians. Reeve and I were the only lesbians. We were a bunch of women, but we were the only dykes. People just assumed, they all got tired with this little brush. They weren't dykes. None of them were dykes. I didn't know another dyke. I thought there were only two dykes in all of Montreal.
Yeah.
So no, there wasn't a crowd of lesbians.
They were all women from the night school?
Yeah, friends. They were just friends. Some of them from nursing school at Montreal General, and some of them from night school. Just friends. They were just women we knew and hung out with. They knew about us. And for some bizarre and weird reason, they accepted us. And we were okay. We were like this weird couple in the midst of all this straight stuff. It was.
Okay, so they knew. So they knew about your relationship.
Everybody knew.
And they were fine.
Yep. Mm. Yep, everybody seemed to be okay. Maybe there was one or two who tried to talk us out of it, but by and large, it was okay. We even all rented a country house together, and Eva and I shared a bedroom. And nobody else shared a bedroom. And they were okay with that, too. I don't know. It's lucky.
Mm. So your family was pretty hostile then?
I'd say, yeah.
And what about other people you knew? Like employers or friends of the family?
They didn't know. It sort of didn't go beyond my immediate family. And it didn't go into the community, and my mother was like, oh, the whole world's gonna know. Well, of course, it's a myth, right? Who's gonna know unless you wear a big thing on your forehead saying, I am a lesbian? Who's gonna know where we're all sleeping? That's absurd. So no, not everybody knew, just our little crowd knew, and my parents knew, and that's it. And my lover's parents didn't even know. And I slept over there like 6 days out of seven.
What was your dad's response?
Oh, well, you know, the L word kills. I wasn't allowed to tell him. Don't tell your father, it'll kill him. Well, my father's fine with it. He knows. He's, when he knew, he's a man of few words. You know, he didn't freak out, he didn't do anything.
So how long after that was it that he actually found out?
He didn't know, actually. I came out again in 1938 into the women's movement, and I had a lover, and it was serious. And I wasn't into being in a closet at that time, and everybody would know, and he knew. And he seemed to be okay. And in fact, he still asks about Margaret, and he knows some of my lovers, and he's okay with them. And Diane and I are there all the time, and he's okay with that too.
So he lives near here too?
He just moved out here.
Oh!
He's 87.
Oh!
And he moved here in May.
Hmm.
Pretty cool.
Alone as your mother's...
Oh, she's been dead a long time. She died when she was 68, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So. How did your mother phrase her opposition to it? What was it about it that was it moral arguments or was it medical ones or what kind of things did she say?
I don't ever know. I never knew. She just generally freaked out. I think she thought I was sick to do this. But she did make her peace with it, too, eventually. Because before she died, and she had said, you know, I'll never set foot in your house. And she and my dad came to Vancouver to stay with us for a week. And then she went home and basically died. And I think she came to make her peace.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that her time was short, and she wanted to acknowledge my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
But it took her a hell of a long time.
Yeah. And during that time, did she ever express any other views to you about it, or did she just not want to talk about it?
No, we never talked about it. It was never a topic of discussion. It was her, I think, anger with me. But then she always seemed angry with me, so who knows if the gay thing was just one more thing, or there was a specific thing. It's hard to kind of weed it out of her.
Mm. And your sister knew from the beginning?
Sister was really young. She's 3.5 years younger than I am. I was just 22. She was a young married woman. I don't think she was part of all this picture. She lived with her husband. I can't really remember if she had any role. I don't remember a role that she played in it. Either for or against. I think she was largely keeping out of it.
So tell me about Reva.
I love her.
Yeah.
Well, she's a neat person. She was really into wanting to be a lesbian, and she was convinced after reading all these books that she was like that, and then after I got convinced that I was like that, we sort of explored together what it means. And I don't know that we ever really figured it out to the extent of a lifestyle, because there was no feminist movement, there was no social outlets there. So I largely was bisexual, I think, in those days, because I needed to go dancing, I needed to go out. I couldn't stand this isolation that we found ourselves in. And we didn't know about the gay bars, or we hadn't discovered any of that. So she was okay. She's a nice woman. In fact, she lives in New York. Her sister lives in New York. Her sister turned out to be a dyke too. And her mother, my mother died, and a year later her father died, and a year later her mother and my father were keeping company.
Mm.
And up until this last year when she got Alzheimer's. So that Reva and I we're sort of still in touch over the folks.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Huh. Yeah. How long did you go out with her?
I think I was about 8 years off and on.
Mm.
We'd kind of break up a little bit, then we get back together because we didn't know any other dykes. So we kept kind of falling back together all the time. And then she moved off to New York, and then kind of slowly we really separated.
How did you maintain a social life and all of that? Did you go out with guys so that you could go dancing?
Yeah.
The two of you, would you go out together with two guys or just separate?
No, I would go. Reva never went anywhere. She was sort of overweight a little bit and shy and definitely not into men. But I wanted to get out. So I wasn't sleeping with these guys, but I was dating them. I was going out, I was partying. I took her to a party. She was not a happy person. I tried to push dates on her. Sometimes she did, sometimes she didn't. It's not good.
So you kind of balanced the two things.
Yeah, I tried. Not always successfully, but I tried. That's why I say when I came out again in 38, when I was 38, and it was like a new coming out, because I came out into feminism and people and social and the whole, everything I wanted, there it was. And so I never looked back.
So that one relationship, was that the only relationship you had before your second coming out?
No. There was some young emerging dyke who came out of the woodwork and came on to Reva, and then decided she really liked me better. And so we kind of all flirted around, and she and I had a very minor encounter, really. I think she was living home, and it was difficult. But I would say the only real relationship I had was Reva before I came out. I had other relationships in that there was another woman from England that I got involved with, but that was also kind of a minor, it wasn't like an 8-year, it was just a minor relationship. So I'd say Reba was the only real relationship
mm.
I had.
Yeah. And how did you work that? I mean, had you been given any sort of idea, either growing up or going to school, how a relationship should work? What was supposed to happen between two people? What kind of ideas did you have about what it would be like when you got together with somebody?
I guess mostly it came out of my parents. I mean, the man went to work and supported the house, and mother stayed home and cooked and cleaned and did all those menial things that mothers do and have babies. And, you know. But then when I got married, I worked full time, and I had the biggest fight with good old George, because he expected me to go to work all day and come home and be the housemaid too. And I don't know where I got my hit of feminism from, because I didn't read it anywhere and I didn't learn it anywhere. But I one day I said, look, I am not doing these dishes. I worked all day. You worked all day. I cooked supper. You do the dishes. We had this humongous fight. Soon every dish in the house was in the sink. And finally he capitulated and he did the dishes. But I knew that I wasn't going to do two jobs. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't going to be working all day and running a house. That was clear to me. But George would have to pull his weight.
Yeah. And did he on an ongoing basis?
I made sure. Mm. Yeah, he did. He did.
Did you want children? At that point in your life?
Yeah, I tried to have a baby. I did get pregnant. I had a miscarriage. Never got pregnant again. And then after 10 years after my divorce, having sex once, I got pregnant. So as a result, I have a marvelous 30-year-old daughter. Totally unplanned and unprepared.
That one night of sexual activity, was that somebody that you ended up having a relationship with, or was it literally just a night?
No, it was somebody I knew. We had dated quite a few times, and we just had that one night of sex. Mm. Actually, I was in a lesbian relationship at the time, and my lover was off sailing around the world with the cruise ship as a dining room waitress, and I was in New York looking after her dad. Her 80-something-year-old dad, and I was really bored, and I got to know Pete, who was a really neat guy. We dated a few times, and I had a little bit too much to drink. I ended up having sex, unprotected sex. I mean, it was a stupid thing to do, but I did it, and there it was. We were driving from Montreal to New York and stopped at a restaurant. I was going outside and being sick, and she said, are you pregnant? Ha ha ha, and I said, maybe. And then the shit hit the fan. It was not a pleasant scene. But anyway, yes, I was pregnant. And.
So you hadn't told her about this little interlude?
No, I hadn't.
Did your relationship endure despite that?
For 11 months, well, and more than 11 months through the pregnancy, and then 11 months after that. Yeah. But it didn't endure well, so she didn't trust me after that. I suppose I couldn't blame her too much.
Did you, what interests me is, I mean, you said you had too much to drink, but did you feel passionate towards this guy?
No, I just had too much to drink. Mm. Okay. The story was, I said, I've never seen the rooftops of New York, and I've been living here for quite a while, so I said, I've seen lots of movies, and everything happens on the roof. I want to see the roof. He said, okay, I'll take you up on the roof of your building. Up we went on the roof of the building, and it was pissing down rain. We were standing under a little eave. We made love, standing up in the rain on the roof top of my building in New York. That was it. It wasn't about passion. It wasn't about feeling sexual. It wasn't about anything, really. It was just, you know, it wasn't miraculous. It was sex.
How did your parents respond to the news of an oncoming grandchild?
They came to visit to New York, and we went to a restaurant. We were eating. My parents said, "So what's new?" And I looked at Ruthie, and she looked at me, and I said, "Should we tell them?" And she said, "I don't know." I said, "I guess we better tell them." I said, "I'm pregnant." And my mother said, "No, what's really new?" And I said, "That's really what's new." There was this dead silence. And I think initially there was like, ah! But I think after the initial moment of shock, my parents kind of took it in stride. Seemed to me.
There wasn't any negativity because you were unmarried at the time?
Didn't seem to be a whole lot of negativity, although there was a bit of pressure after the baby was born and she was 11 months and I moved back to Montreal. There was a little pressure for me to marry. I was dating an old boyfriend. That wasn't going to lead to marriage. He had a stepfather who said he could never be a stepfather to a child because of his circumstance. So that was fine. That wasn't going to happen. Then I knew this other guy, Louis, who was a kind of a Louis the Thief. He was a rather unsavory guy, but he wanted to marry me. I never intended to marry him, but my parents went into an absolute panic mode. And I said to my mother, "Well, obviously then, you don't just want me to marry anybody." So after that, they got off my back. Mm. I threatened to marry Louis. They kind of backed off and took some of the pressure off me. And then eventually they stopped expecting it. It obviously wasn't going to happen, so...
And were you working full-time right up until you gave birth?
Yep. Yep. I worked in New York. I worked for National Biscuit Company, NBC.
Doing what?
Telecommunications, telex, teletype, all that stuff. Call that with earphones, dictation, transcribing, I don't know, office stuff, I guess.
Did that give you enough of an income to be able to live on your own, or did you live with other people?
Oh, at that time I lived with Ruthie and her dad. Mm. Yeah. We still all live together.
What happened after the baby?
I still live there.
And you stopped working full time?
I went back to work when she was 3 months. Yeah. Had a caregiver for her, a very nice woman, and I was worked. And I came back to Montreal, she was 11 months old. Phoned home, I said, "Hi, how do you feel about me coming home?" My mom said, "For a visit?" I said, "No, to live." She said, "Okay, where shall we meet you? When do we meet you?" So they took me in, and I said, when I moved in, "I'm only staying till Pony's 3, because I think a kid shouldn't have lots of caregivers their first 3 years. They need some sort of stability." Mm-hmm. So I said, "When she's 3, I'm moving out. I need you to know that." She said, "Okay," and when Pony turned 3, I moved out. And I lived on my own.
And supported yourself right through.
Yeah.
How did having a young child, or did having a young child, interfere with forming new relationships after you'd moved back to Montreal?
Well, nobody was too keen on dating somebody with a baby. But there were still enough people that would date me. I guess I was cute or something. Little and cute, you know. I don't know, good dancer. Could always find a date. I always had a date. I always had people in my life.
And had you discovered the gay bars by then?
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. When did I discover the gay bars? It was pretty late. It was not too... Well, I don't know. I can't remember now. The gay bars. How old was I when I discovered the gay bars? Okay. I was somewhere in my late 20s, I believe. Or even early 30s, maybe. I'm a late bloomer that way.
probably early 30s.
In Montreal?
Yeah. Discovered the Pont de Paris. And then I didn't know what to do with it. I couldn't fit in there. As a non-drinker, I'm neither a butcher or femme, of any clear definability that if you looked at me, you could have... You knew I wasn't exactly a femme, but according to the butch code, I wasn't exactly a butch either, so... People would look at me and scratch their heads, and I'd sit there alone, and I wasn't really butch enough to know to go up to some femme and say, you know, would you like to dance? And no butch would ever come and ask this woman in pants to dance, so it was kind of like I was there, neither fish nor fowl. And I didn't drink besides, so... And I was too stupid to know you could order a Coke in a bar. I thought you had to drink if you were in a bar. So I'd have my drink, my token drink, sometimes too. Then I'd leave, because how long can you nurse your rye and ginger ale? I mean, you can only nurse it for so long. And you got these women, these big bulldogs coming around saying, looking at your glass. And I was intimidated by the whole thing too. So,
How did you find out where it was?
My ex-lover, Riva, was going through her sister's... No, how did I find out about this? Is that how I found out? I think that's how I found out. She's the one who told me that there was a bar in Montreal that I could go to.
And your first time, did you go by yourself?
Or yeah.
Wow.
I went alone. Very brave.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I go by myself. I got to know some of the lesbians that hung out there, but they all spoke French. There was another division between me and everybody there. They were all French-speaking, except me. My French was... I was shy. It was okay, but... You know, it was very difficult. Really, really difficult. I didn't go that often, but I went. Quite a few times. The only lovers I ever had, and there were quite a few until I came into feminist movement after...